added point, the point of the game so far.
Micheál Ó Murtaigh was born in a family home in Dún Sin, just outside Dingle, County Kerry, on August 20th, 1930. One of eight children born to his mother, Katie Quinn, and his father, Teddy Moriarty. 18 years later, he began the final year of his teacher training at St. Patrick's College of Education in Drumcondra in Dublin.
The big attraction, of course, of being in Pat's was Croke Park, principally. And to nearly the first place we went, that was the Mecca. And I don't think we were a full week there when we saw the first All-Ireland final I ever saw. Mayo against Cavan in 1948.
In early March 1949, Micheál, along with 10 other students from the college, did an audition on a hurling game in Croke Park for Ready Erin. Kerryman had never seen a game of hurling before in his life, but he was the one selected. His first assignment was to provide an all-Irish commentary on the 1949 Railway Cup final on St. Patrick's Day. He graduated from St. Patrick's College a little later and also completed an arts degree from UCD. He taught economics, accountancy and Irish in both primary and secondary schools throughout Dublin until the 1980s, when he became a full-time broadcaster with RTE.
The game is on, the ball thrown in by Patrick Kelly. Cork playing down towards the railway goal in the first half in the ball. Nobody got it into the hand yet. Picked up by Gerry O'Connor and the first test of Henry of the centre-back, John Tennyson.
In 1970, he married Helena McDowell and together they had eight children. His beautiful accent, his unique turn of phrase and ability to paint pictures with words captured the minds and hearts of his listeners, the people of Ireland and abroad.
Well, there's a streaker on the ground now. He must be a Kilkenny man because he's quite happy with the situation.
I'm sitting between two very privileged people, joint owners of Druids Jono, Patsy Borden from Dua and His Royal Highness Prince Edward. I think, Prince, your reaction to that great run by the favourite.
Well, it was great. No, it was great. And it was well worth coming here and to see that.
Away from the microphone, he trained the Kerry footballers based in Dublin for Mick O'Dwyer during the 1970s and 80s. Footballers from other counties also benefited from his coaching skills.
It's all about six razzle-dazzle Riga. He's going to win the laurels for Micheál Ó Murtaigh.
His love of greyhound racing was well known, and while he often called a race live on RT Radio, he was also a proud owner of an Irish laurels winner. His journey in broadcasting earned him a place in the Guinness Book of Records for having the longest career as a live match commentator. Micheál was a special man with a special broadcasting talent. Today, Micheál Ó Murtaigh died, but the magic of his voice and the memories he gave us will mean in our minds he will live forever. Gurev Míle Maith Micheál.
Once an All-Ireland final is over, especially the last one of the year, it's like closing in something. But you're already looking forward to the resurrection. And like the flowers that grow after the flowers dying with the frost of the winter, the new ones will come if you're lucky enough to be around for them.
Des Cahill joins us now. Des, Micheál Ó Murtaigh, he really was one in a million, as Marty was saying there, that beautiful turn of phrase, the beautiful accent. His commentary, his descriptive skills were just unmatched. How will you remember him?
Well, I remember him, obviously he was older than me, but as a great friend. I'm 40 years now in RT Sport, and Micheál O'Hare was still operating when I started. And in the mid-80s then, Micheál Ó Murtaigh replaced Micheál O'Hare, and he was to go on and become the voice of GA, as Marty has so eloquently put it there previously. But there's elements to him that, you know, he was an absolute rogue. He had a sense of humour. He was such fun. I mean, sometimes somebody would be spouting on, it might often have been me, and he had a great ability to turn and just kind of catch your eye, and he didn't say anything, you know, and I'd laugh with him. I'd know exactly what he was saying. On Uber Ianshe Dun Gwelga, Nihingak Aina, and May the Brevion, Gahoriz and the Gwel Skullina, the Gwel Skulls. Domek Crinu Ershul in Oitagan, Ainoit Satir, Kun Bunskull, Husnu Velk Micheál Aoun. He was everywhere. Wherever they wanted to start a Gaelscoil, he was there. And the growth we've had in Gaelscoil in around the country, because there were none when he started. I went to Colossia, where I was one of only a handful of Irish speaking schools. And his work for the language and the culture and his love of the language and the culture was fantastic. His love of golf, his love of the greyhounds, there's so many elements to him. But the biggest thing was he was such a people person, Cian. I remember one trip turned out to be a nightmare trip with him because we were going to Cork. Ger Cunningham was running some charity golf thing in Cork and we were staying overnight. So this was going to be great. Michal was driving even better. So we went down, played the golf. And there's loads of fellas there. I knew GA fellas, and I'd be having a drink. Michal wasn't. And he said, we're going at 7:30 in the morning. And I was going, this is very early. I had to be back in Dunleary for 2:00. I was looking after a cool under 21 team. But if we're leaving at 7:30, that's grand. So I didn't get much sleep, but I'm ready at 7:30. And he says, I have one call to make on the way now. And he said, where are we going to? Ballyvourney. This is the wrong direction if you're heading for Dublin. So he had to go out to Ballyvourney. He had to do a voiceover in Irish for a programme. And we went out there and we're in Ballyvourney and we're still okay for time. I'm happy. And he says, will we go out to the Hannafins and say hello? Will we say hello to the Hannafins? And I had worked for the Kerryman newspaper and Dermot Hannafin had played for Kerry. And his parents, Michal says, will we go out to that? I says, that's Castle Island, Michal. That's another 30 miles the wrong direction. Just cup on tay and we'll be on our way. And so we go out for a cup on tay there, and that's another hour. And I'm going, and we're coming through, we get through Limerick, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to make it. And he says, "An meg uk the roach yogurt." You know, do you like an ice cream? So we stop in Nina into Michael Cleary, there the great tip hurler for an uk the roach. Yeah, Skippy. And while we're standing talking, the fellas there is talking about this horse that's running in 10 minutes somewhere in Doncaster or something. So often we do go across the road with these lads to watch the horse, and then they have a tip for the next one. We're there. So but the match is long gone at this stage. I got home about 7:30 that night. He was a disaster to go travelling with because he knew everybody everywhere.
But that was it. He was so approachable and he was just open to meeting people.
He was, yeah. And everyone had a story and a warmth. And he had a great memory for these people as well.
Just
he paid for one. I remember one Christmas party we had at Shelbourne Park. Right. And he paid for the whole lot because we paid a fiver extra for bets. And he put the bets on for us. And we went through the card. We won every race. It covered the Christmas party. What a man.
Just stay on the line, Des. Jarlath Burns, president of the GAA, is in studio with us here. How will you remember Micheál Mura Hurtig?
Well, I could listen to Des all day. Des, there's definitely a book in what you've written there, some of the stories. Obviously, as a former county player with Armagh, we always wanted Micheál to be commentating on our games because we just knew that Micheál would weave those little magic spells and we always wanted to hear him say our names. That's how much of a legend Micheál was to us. But later on then, I worked with Micheál on a series called The Underdogs where we took all of these no-hoper footballers to turn them into a team and we were going to play Kerry. And at the first meeting, Micheál says, I have two players that I would like to recommend. There's one called Kieran Donaghy from Tralee and there's another Cork man called Pierce O'Neill. Those two players became the stars of our team. Kieran, we actually called him Star. He won an All-Ireland with Kerry. Pierce O'Neill then won an All-Ireland in 2010 with Cork, which was ironically the very last game that Micheál commentated on. So all of those little stories are even beyond his incredible magical abilities as a commentator.
But like we all have our stories about him, or even if he was doing the commentary on a match, you know, going back in time, he was always there with us. I remember a famous goal being scored by Seanie O'Leary against Tipperary and I was devastated, but his commentary was just unmatched because he'd paint pictures with words.
He would, and remember, I think it was Jack O'Shea scoring a fantastic goal in the All-Ireland final, and, you know, Micheál's commentary was, he's on the 21, he's on the 14, I shot that goal. And another day, he was commentating on the Leinster final, a very famous Leinster final between Dublin and Kerry, and Jerry McEntee, that iconic Meath footballer, because he was a doctor, he wasn't able to go to all the training sessions, he only came on in the second half. And I remember he came on and he stood in the square and the ball came up and he caught this magnificent ball, about 5 minutes to go. And on the way home, I listened to the news and they covered it the way he said it. And the ball comes into the square. The doctor rises. Yeah. What a beautiful way of putting it. And that's exactly what it was. Jerry McEntee, defined by his incredible medical ability, and for Micheál to say, you know, the doctor rises. And that's exactly the type of person that Micheál was.
Because there's so much information in that. But Des mentioned it earlier on as well, the grow for the Gaeilge, because he'd be doing a commentary and he'd just weave it in a very easy way that
That's
people
right.
could understand and could own as part of their own culture.
Yeah, I think one of the things that he would always have said is that if people knew the amount of other languages that they know of Irish, they would be boasting about it. And Barthera Vrihervishim or Shinner Vixig Janu Traktrakta in Yelige Agazamerle, because he used to work for Radio Nogaeltacht Fosta. And he could just weave this little bit of Irish in. And as a result of that, that was almost a precursor to T.G. Cahir taking on with full Irish commentary, because Micheál almost prepared us for that. The way in which he could, whenever he got really excited, he would throw the Irish in, because that was his first language coming from West Kerry. And that was the language that he grew up with. And you are right, whenever you say that, you know, he did so much for the Irish language in a very unobtrusive, beautiful, elegant, gentle way by just casting it into the middle of his commentary.
Well, we have a Kerry man on the line now, Kerry footballer Pat Spillane. How will you remember Micheál Mór Hurtig?
Well, it's so sad to hear of Micheál's passing. A wonderful, wonderful human being with not a bad bone in his body, just a great Irishman, a great Kerryman, a great Gael, a great Gael Gore. You know, there are so many nice tributes in, so, and I read them all, and I look at, the Taoiseach summed up a lot of what he said about Micheál being the legend. Des talked about his humour, being a great people person, his link with the Irish diaspora through his radio commentaries. Look, he was the vice of Gaelic games, and as Giles said, you know, he brought excitement to the worst of games. He brought atmosphere to the worst of games. He painted a picture of games that you felt you were at the game, but you weren't. He was just a wonderful, wonderful man. Like I said, I've never, and this must be unique in Ireland, I have never heard anyone say a bad word about Micheál Murchtig. That was a cut the person is. But I think it's the vice and the humour I will remember him from. And, but, you know, I saw lots of tributes there, but can I just quote you something that I thought I saw on X, and it was from a former colleague of mine in the Sunday World, Roy Curtis. And I thought, this is just beautiful, and this sums up Micheál Murchtig. And these are Roy's words. His symphonic West Kerry lilt was the soundtrack of the long days. His vice was a sonic river dance, a traditional, vibrant, soaring, musical, heart-lifting celebration of Irishness. His words danced, the Carran tool of commentators.
They danced indeed. Charlotte?
Yes, that's absolutely beautiful, Pat. And I know that this will resonate with you, because when I used to play for Silverbridge and maybe be, let's say, up the north of the country playing Clannagale or Clannairn, and you'd be coming home listening to the first half of, let's say, Dublin against Kerry or one of the games that was on, and you'd be rushing to try and get home to watch the second half on the television. My father used to, who'd be with us, he used to sit in the car to listen to the rest of Micheál Mór Hurtig's commentary on the radio rather than go in and actually watch it on the television. And we used to be looking out the window at him and thinking, oh my God. And that is the epitome of what Micheál Mór Hurtig could do. Pat, you're 100% right. He could actually create almost a better image of the game than the images themselves that you were watching, which is a remarkable tribute to somebody who was on the radio.
Well, Des, wasn't it a case of his voice sometimes carrying a game, even if you were at it? If you weren't listening at home, you might have the wireless in your ear in Croke Park.
No, there's so many images, even before there were earplugs, you know, with people just with radios on their shoulders listening to him, even though they're watching the match. And of course, many people used to turn down the TV volume and listen to Micheál's radio commentary. But funny, just when Gerald was talking, a commentary clip has come into my head, and I know a lot of the ones that are there in the archive and all that, and this one is very poor quality. The line was very poor on the day of a Connacht final when Leitrim won for the first time since 1929. This would have been 1994. And Micheál finished. So it was unbelievable for Leitrim to win this. You know, they've beaten Roscommon, Galway, Mayo. The pitches invaded. Declan Darcy was receiving the cup with the man who had been captain in 1929. It was extraordinary, extraordinary stuff. And Micheál referred in the commentary in a crackly line, now it was really crackly, but in a way that added to the atmosphere. He referred to Leitrim people leaning over the banisters of heaven, looking down on the scene below, and the joy. And that's in my head now, and I've no doubt can make Sheshenig Dane of Shin. Us in a blinter, right?
Daz Cahill, GAA President Dermot Burns, and Pat Spillane, thanks for those memories. We'll have more on Micheál Ó Murtagh later. Still to come on News at One, the continuing fallout from the case of an Irish soldier who viciously assaulted a woman in Limerick. Jack Chambers is the new finance minister after Michael McGrath was nominated by government as Ireland's next European commissioner. And RTE's new five-year plan.
Are you worried about the cost of going to college? Well, thanks to SUSE, financial support may be available to you. SUSE is Ireland's awarding authority for student grants, and applications are now open for the academic year 24-25. But you better get started. The priority closing date for new applications is Thursday, the 11th of July, and it's fast approaching. Visit SUSE.ie to check your eligibility and start the process today. SUSE, supporting you all the way. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Is é ishka éirin fontas náisiúnta ishka na héirin. Tá ishka éirin freagracha as ishka ól feibli náisiúnta a hóláthar de éirin. Ishka tá dlán, saválta agus ín tífa. De freis a sin tá sé freagracha as servisí fiol ishka a chur ar fáil don tír. Madur le héin chéis fí servisí nó chan aibid a chiantar a hir ishku, is féidir dola jagvá le ishka éirin fithi cara orsa sa lá, seach lán na seachtana. Ag héin ocht na náj náj, dó seacht ocht, dó seacht a hocht. Ishka éirin. Ag sóláthar servisí ishka de éirin.
Welcome back. Now, politics. Jack Chambers is the new Minister for Finance. This comes as Michael McGrath has been given the Irish government's nomination as European Commissioner. Here's what Michael McGrath was saying earlier.
25 years ago this month, I ran for election for the very first time as a much more fresh-faced 22-year-old. I have enjoyed the journey since, from town council to county council to Dáil Éireann and to the cabinet table, and it has been an immense privilege. And I'd like to thank the people of Cork South Central for their outstanding support over that period of time. And all going well, I will be continuing in public service, but now in a different role and on a different stage. And I certainly could not have done any of this without the extraordinary love and support of my family, especially my wife, Sarah.
Political correspondent Micheál Lehane joins us now. Micheál, let's talk about the new Minister for Finance. Are people surprised?
Well, I suppose it was between Jack Chambers and Derek Leary. That's the way the speculation was going. Very clearly, Jack Chambers' promotion last week to deputy leader of Fianna Fáil was a signal that there were further big things on the way for him. He becomes one of the youngest finance ministers. He has been at the cabinet table for the last 4 years, though, in his role as chief whip and then the super junior at transport. So there is pretty a lot of experience there. There also was that brief stint as a junior minister at the Department of Finance before he was elevated to chief whip in the summer of 2020. But he is young. However, there is great faith in him from the party leadership. Micheál Martin saying as much today and again last week, speaking about his skills when it comes to organising Fianna Fáil's local election campaign recently, but in particular also citing that work he did as chief whip in bringing the government together in those early days when it was a new government back in 2020. So for all of those reasons, he's the one who has got the nod.
You talk about his skills. What experience does he bring to the role? Is he seen as having an economic background or experience of serving in an economic portfolio?
Well, I suppose you can see that there was a fairly brief stint in finance as a junior back in the summer of 2020. His qualifications are multiple. They are legal and they are medical, but I suppose they aren't economic. But it isn't the first time at all that there has been someone appointed to finance without economic qualifications. What he does bring is a rigorousness, a thoroughness, and perhaps to a degree of caution when it comes to making decisions. So I think there is a view that Jack Chambers too is well respected. Across Fianna Fáil, has been very detailed in his approach to different work. There has been most recently his road safety campaign and that work to reduce speed limits across the country. When he was in the role of chief whip, there wasn't just the skills of bringing the government together at that time, which were the chief ones. He also had the role of Gaeltacht Minister for Sport. And of course, during the pandemic, sport and the reintroduction of sport at different times around restrictions was a crucial thing. And he has seemed to have handled that well also. But yes, is it a step up? It's a big step up for a young politician, but one that his party leader believes he's well capable of making.
Briefly, what's the knock-on effect of this?
Well, the knock-on effect, I suppose, is that Fianna Fáil has a finance minister that is Dublin-based. There will have to be another promotion now. Someone gets the super junior role at Cabinet. I suppose, will people be looking to Dara Cailleary there? Could someone like Niamh Smith come into contention as well? For Michael McGrath, it's off to Europe now, isn't it? And the horse trading really beginning to try and secure that post, that prestigious economic post. That's something that the Taoiseach told Cabinet this morning. He wants everyone to work together to secure. And of course, that really begins in earnest on Thursday when there is that European summit meeting.
And what portfolio will he be hunting for?
Well, I think anything on the economic side, and the top tier of the economic ones are what the government are after here. And I suppose the fact that Michael McGrath is relinquishing his role at finance immediately means that they are throwing everything behind that campaign.
Micheál Lehane, thank you. The fallout from the case of a woman beaten unconscious by a serving soldier in Limerick continues today. Taoiseach Simon Harris said this morning it raises very grave and serious questions and shone a very serious light in relation to the Defence Forces. Here's what he said.
I think this raises a number of important issues, and I need to talk more broadly than the specific case. Judicial training, sentencing guidelines, the work of the Judicial Council. I think they're all practical actions that need to absolutely be considered in terms of next steps. I think we also have to be very conscious, again, without talking about a specific case, that part of the system does allow a DPP to appeal any sentence that he or she believes to be too lenient or indeed inappropriate in any way. So the legal proceedings and the legal process may not yet have ended in relation to this case. That remains to be seen. But once that window has closed and once the legal proceedings have concluded, I'll absolutely want to meet with Natasha O'Brien because we need more people to be coming forward. We need to have a zero tolerance approach, and what we certainly don't need is anybody being put off coming forward by a situation where they feel that a crime that carried out wasn't matched in terms of justice. But I do think there's very specific issues here in relation to the Defence Forces, and it's a harsh thing for me to have to say as Taoiseach, but I feel I need to say it. Would the Defence Forces be carrying out the review that they're now carrying out? Was there not so much public interest in this? There are people in the Defence Forces who clearly knew this was happening. Why did they do nothing? These are very serious questions. And as Taoiseach, I'm not satisfied in relation to this. I'm not satisfied at all. I am really angry about it because we're now seeing a flurry of activity. But that flurry of activity is only coming about because of the bravery of Natasha O'Brien. And I want to know how many other people are hiding with convictions in relation to domestic, sexual or gender-based violence. They have no place, absolutely no place in our Defence Forces.
Taoiseach Simon Harris there. Former Army Ranger and Independent TD for Kildare South, Cathal Berry, says politicians are ill-informed about the military. He spoke to us earlier. First, I got his reaction to those comments by the Taoiseach.
I think initially I just think they're a little bit ill-informed, which I don't blame him for. I mean, he's hardly going to be across all the detail across all government departments. The big issue I'd have is that there's a perception out there that the Defence Force regulations are somehow the Army's rules, but they're not. Defence Force regulations are statutory instruments. They're secondary legislation. They're written by politicians and imposed on the Defence Force. So all the Defence Forces are doing is following verbatim the rules created by politicians.
But you're saying the Taoiseach is ill-informed. He was talking about Natasha O'Brien and how she had shone a very serious light in relation to the Defence Forces. And he said it raises very grave and serious questions.
Well, I was just answering your question in relation to his Defence Force comments, just to be very, very clear. So it does raise questions for sure. But the big issue that I would have is the Defence Forces accept their share of the blame in relation to this. What they don't accept, and quite rightly, is that there's other people at fault as well, particularly from the political apparatus point of view. They're the people who designed and drafted and signed off on these regulations, imposed them on the Defence Forces, and the Defence Forces, all they're doing is applying these regulations by the letter of the law. So if the Taoiseach or any politician wants the Defence Forces to breach the law and break the law, they should be very, very explicit and say that.
Well, under Defence Forces Regulation A10, a soldier is automatically dismissed from service if sentenced to prison by civilian courts. However, if soldiers receive a fine or suspended sentence, military authorities have discretion over whether to discharge or not. You say the Defence Forces can't make up their own rules, but they can make up their own decisions.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that regulation. It's paragraph 58 of Defence Force Regulation 810. And if you read further down the paragraph, you can see quite specifically there's a sequence there. That the Defence Forces cannot take action against one of their serving personnel until the proceedings in a civilian court have first been completed. And furthermore, that if the perpetrator appeals that civilian court finding, the Defence Forces also cannot take any action whatsoever until the appeal is completed. So the sequencing issue is already underway. The civilian court has issued their findings, and now the Defence Forces can take action. So the problem here is with the regulation, not with the Defence Forces' action.
How could that change?
Very simply. So a Defence Force regulation is a statutory instrument, and it's signed off by the Minister of the day. So Micheál Martin, today, the Taoiseach, could change Defence Force Regulation 810 as he sees fit and modernise it. But a better way and a more, I guess, medium-term solution is Jennifer Carroll-McNeill is the appointed junior Minister for Defence, the Minister for State at the Department of Defence. She's been appointed for months now, but no delegated powers have been given to her whatsoever. She's a barrister at law, highly competent, very able politician. She would be ideal if the powers were delegated to her. She could review all these Defence Force regulations to make sure they're fit for the modern world. And for instance, in organisations, if there was gross misconduct by an employee can quite rightly be dismissed summarily without notice if gross misconduct happens. And the same thing should apply for the Defence Force.
So just to be clear on this, what are you calling for?
First of all, a review of Defence Force regulations, which is in the realm of politics. So if we're looking to blame somebody here, if politicians are looking to blame an organisation, they should be looking closer to home rather than trying to throw the Defence Forces under the bus for following the rules that politicians themselves have drafted for them. And secondly, that Jennifer Carroll-McNeill, who is the appointed junior Minister of Defence, should be given the delegated powers to carry out her function properly. There's 20 ministers for state at the Department of Defence, 20 ministers for state in government at the moment. The only one that has no delegated powers is Minister for State at the Department of Defence. And that tells you how bad the political governance of the defence apparatus has been, in particular over the last 12 years.
We see in the Irish Times that Defence Forces generals held a high-level meeting to determine the number of serving personnel with convictions for gender-based violence. What does that say about the culture in the Defence Forces if military authorities don't have this information to hand?
Well, first of all, the Defence Forces fully accept that gender-based violence, unfortunately, is a societal issue. And if it's in society, it's in the Defence Forces, it's in our political parties, it's everywhere, it's probably here and even in this building. It's good that the Defence Force is doing a review, for sure, because we have to respond. But the reality is, it is everywhere in society.
But what does it say about the culture in the Defence Forces?
The culture in the Defence Forces is quite similar to the culture in Irish society. Unfortunately, it's a feature of Irish society. This is pervasive and it's very, very prevalent, and it still has to be stamped out. And we're not there yet, so more work is required.
Cathal Bury there. In a statement to this programme, the Defence Forces said Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Sean Clancy has ordered a review into a variety of issues, including personnel conduct. After the break, RTE's new 5-year strategy.
Summer lunchtime with the RTE Concert Orchestra and gifted violinist Sarah Brassel, conducted by Killian Farrell. Come and join us for a string sensation in the National Concert Hall, performing the music of Dvorak, Saint-Saëns and Smetana. Summer lunchtime with the RTE Concert Orchestra. NCH Dublin, Tuesday, August 20th. See rte.ie/co for more.
RTE Radio 1.
Shania Twain.
Let's go, girls.
Live in Dublin. Performing one incredible show. Malahide Castle, this Friday, June 28th.
Extra tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie.
Subject to license. Don't miss Shania Twain, live at Malahide Castle this Friday.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back to News at 1. RTE publishes a new five-year strategy today at 3 o'clock. Staff will be briefed by Director General Kevin Backhurst. The strategy is called A New Direction. Arts and Media correspondent Evelyn O'Rourke is here to preview the announcement. Evelyn, there are three strands in this publication. Do we know what they are?
I know a lot of reports and publications and documents to talk about today, but yeah, three strands to it. The first one, that strategy that you mentioned there, we can mention in a minute. But that third one, the implementation one, is important. So you've got the strategy document, you've got the governance framework, and then the implementation roadmap. And this really, that last one, the implementation roadmap, this arises from the 116 recommendations included in the three external reports, which the Minister for Media, Catherine Martin, had published in May. So this document will outline when and if RTÉ will implement the changes suggested, if they've not done so already. Some have already been rolled out. And the overall aim of all these publications, of course, is to continue to satisfy the requirement from the Minister to release the full interim funding for the organisation. So these documents are really significant.
The strategy then, it's a really big part of this. What can we expect to hear?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have it yet. We're going to get it later on, and the staff will be discussing it with the DG when he rolls it out with the interim, his interim leadership team at 3 o'clock. So it'll be interesting. But at this stage, we can expect to see certain things raised in it. And for the staff at RTÉ, I suppose one of the main talking points is going to centre on the reduction in headcount, the net headcount reduction of 20%, which is around 400 people. Now, this strategy, as we say, it's due to cover 5 years. So would that headcount come down through natural attrition over time? There is an understanding there won't be compulsory redundancies, but there's been a lot of speculation about a pending voluntary exit package for staff. So the strategy today is expected to address any package and maybe outline how it might work, including any terms and conditions that may be attached to it.
So this will make RTÉ smaller in one sense, will it?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, the five-year strategy builds on another strategy. So in November, for example, the DG published the 10-point strategic vision. And what happened then was staff and public had consultations on it. All of that feedback, all the things that have arisen since then, have fed into this kind of final document today. So we do know lots of bits that were there in November that should be built on for today. So yes, number one, there's two things happening. One is RTÉ demonstrating to the government and to the minister that they're getting their house in order as such. And secondly, is staff, what kind of changes are going to happen? And in November, the DG did say hard choices will be made about the challenge of managing RTÉ's future against an uncertain financial backdrop. So we're going to see how that comes through later on.
What would that mean for the independent sector, for regional broadcasting?
Well, I suppose it was very good news for the independent sector and for regional broadcasting. Back in November, RTÉ had said that the station will have two production centres, with operations in Cork expanding, reducing Dublin, and a renewed commitment to Limerick and Galway. We'll get more details on that too. The independent bit is interesting because, again, production from RTÉ, commissions to the independent production companies, there should be talk of an increase of an overall investment of 50% above current levels by 2028. Now, you know, if RTÉ is going to discuss the prospect of this, obviously more people work in the independent sector means you need more qualified staff to work in the independent sector. So where do they come from? What happens there? There's a long tradition maybe of people who worked here for years going to the independent sector, but that's going to be interesting now too.
So RTÉ will look quite different in 5 years, but the cornerstone of this new strategy is funding. Can we expect to hear anything from Kevin Backhurst on that today?
Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely look smaller, and I suppose, as you say, the main thing is funding. Now, the issue is the decision on funding is one for the government and not one that Mr. Backhurst can make, but it is undoubtedly a cornerstone for it. What we are maybe expecting to hear later on today is him calling for even more clarity on the timeline. But as you mentioned, we have a new Minister for Finance in town, so that's going to be interesting. That throws an interesting shade on this too. So it's an ongoing story.
Evelyn O'Rourke, thanks for all of that. Busy day ahead for you. Thank you.
Sport on RTÉ Radio 1.
Now, here with the news of sport is Michael Corcoran. Michael, a sad day. Micheál Ó Maire Chuirtig passing away. What are your memories of him?
It is a sad day. I mean, 93 years of age. I mean, a fantastic age. And a man I had the privilege of working alongside for a long period of time in the sports department. There are one or two things that I was kind of thinking about in the last hour or so in relation to him. And when rugby was the Aviva Stadium stroke Lansdowne Road was being refurbished, and rugby moved to Croke Park for the start of the 2007 Six Nations Championship. And I'd obviously been to Croke Park as a fan and everything like that, but never as a broadcaster. And I remember he arranged for me to go to Croke Park for the football semi-finals and final the year before in 2006. I think it was Dublin Mayo and Kerry against Cork. And he got me a seat in the row behind where he was sitting, so I could kind of visualise what my job was going to be the following year for the Six Nations Championship. And I was just completely fascinated at how he operated, because he had two members of his family, one on either side, and they were helping each other, and there was arms flying all over the place, pointing at, you know, various little snippets of information and the whole thing. And he kept, I mean, the ball was, as Jarlath Byrne said earlier there, the ball was always up and down the pitch at 100 miles an hour. So too was his commentary, to be fair about it. And so too were the people helping him, that I was absolutely exhausted coming out of there thinking, you know, do I have to try and emulate something like that, to be fair about it? But he was a brilliant man. He was a brilliant man. God rest him. That was one of early memory of him, that first game Ireland losing to France. But he was very, very helpful with advice to younger people, to be fair about it. And the tributes that have been paid already in this programme have been iconic, to be fair. May he rest in peace. Just a couple of things in terms of the other sports news of the day, and it seems kind of insignificant, to be perfectly honest about it. Some really big games in terms of the Euros 2024. The Austrian boss, Ralf Rangnick, has urged his side to get the result they need against the Netherlands to avoid the complicated scenario of finishing third. Austria will guarantee one of the top spots in Group D if they beat the Dutch. That game is at 5. France in action against already eliminated Poland. Later on tonight, the spotlight is on England. They will top their group with a win against Slovenia. Denmark and Serbia are the other two games. So a lot of play in the Euros on a day like this.
Michael Corcoran, thanks a million. And that's the news this lunchtime. Mark McGrath was on sound today. Broadcast coordinator was Anne-Marie Donlan. The editor of the News at One is Conor Barnes. Stay tuned for Liveline up shortly with Katie Hannan. But before we go, we'll leave you with the voice of Micheál Omar Hertig, a broadcasting legend. May he rest in peace.
50 yards out from the Dublin goal, on the right-hand side of the field, Morris Fitzgerald kicking it, dropping it in toward the goal, dropping it in. Johnny Dooley would be wise to tap it over the bar and hope for something to develop later on. Johnny Dooley looks as if he'll go for the point, all right. No, he doesn't. No, and he's got the goal!
This summer at Boots, we're with you for hay fever relief to take on that hype, as well as foot care to take care of yourself afterwards. With buy one, get the second half price on health solutions, we're with you for saving summer. Boots, with you for life. Selected stores, products and boots.ie. Excludes medicines. Cheapest product half price. Offer ends 10th September.
Edith Piaf, the iconic French chanteuse. Friday, July 12th at the National Concert Hall, the National Symphony Orchestra and the acclaimed Piaf singer and interpreter Camille O'Sullivan pay tribute to her and to her Belgian soulmate, Jacques Brel. With signature songs including Milor, No, Je ne regrette rien, La vie en rose, and Ne me quitte pas. CNCH.ie.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in store or online.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan here with you until 3 o'clock on this day, this very sad day, where we are hearing the news that we have lost Micheál Omar Hertig, a Kerry man extraordinaire, an Irish man extraordinaire. I see the statement in from the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, there saying the word legend gets used too often, but for Micheál, it is almost not enough. And those are very, very true words. I played this clip earlier when I was talking to Shea Byrne, and I think we should play it in because it was in his own words, his feelings about leaving the stage, his first leaving of the stage when he retired from commentating back in 2010. And this is Micheál Ó Maire Thuaidh speaking on The Late Late Show on that occasion.
I've been enjoying every single game I ever did since 1949. Now I began to say to myself, supposing the day came that I'd no longer enjoy it, that I'd look upon it as going out to do a day's work. Mm. And I said I'd hate to experience that. I think that's what swayed me more than anything, to decide that I've been doing it long enough, and while it's still most enjoyable, to leave the scene.
Micheál Ó Maire Thuaidh, in his own words there. We should say as well, of course, the country is coming to terms with losing a national treasure, a voice that was the voice of the GAA, but the voice of Ireland for many of the diaspora for decades. But of course, his family and his close friends have lost somebody very, very special. And our thoughts, of course, are with all of them today. I want to go to somebody who would have known, who knew Micheál very, very well. Bomer Liston, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
And I know I broke the news to you a little earlier there, Bomer. It's shocking. I mean, he was a great age. We say that, but it's always too soon when you're losing somebody of Micheál Ó Maire Thuaidh's stature.
Yes, look, he was a great friend and a great friend to a lot of people. But he's left great memories behind to a lot of people. He'll be fondly remembered. And I'd just like to take this opportunity of sending my sympathies to Helena and all the family. He was really, truly loved, especially by Al-Qaeda.